And we're live. My name is Walt. I'm from Hazard Studio, and we're running the Indie Creator Spotlight. Today, we are talking to Chris Hebert from the great city of Boston and HB Comics, and talking about his Kickstarter, Vindicator, May You Live in Interesting Times. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. First of all, Vindication, actually, is the name of the title.
Excuse me. I usually have one big gap during these shows, so hopefully that'll be it.
Get it out of the way early. I like it.
And how long has the Kickstarter been running, sir?
So we actually started it right before the beginning of June. I had basically planned it to go to the beginning of July. So July 1st is the last day. So we got about, I think it's 17 days left.
And we're just about halfway there?
Yeah, actually just slightly over now. We're, I think, 53%.
Excellent. And what can you tell people about HB Comics? First of all, where's the name HB Comics? I have my own idea of what HB Comics might be, but let me see if I'm right. Where'd the name come from?
So HB, the original name, as suggested by my brother, who's much more direct on the nose than I am, was Hebert Brothers Comics. And I was never like, I don't want my name on it. I felt that was too much. So I was just like, why don't we just shorten it with HB? You know, I thought it worked a little bit more. And plus, you know, then you can make the logo with the, you know, it seemed to work.
Absolutely. See, I'm totally wrong. I was thinking like HB, like pencil lead.
No, ironically, I haven't used pencil lead in about 2 years. I actually do everything on a Wacom Cintiq tablet now. So
that's pretty great.
I'm a lefty, so I'd get like the lead all over my. I can't do it.
So when you're using your Cintiq, do you get to use that cool mitten?
No. I just smudge it.
So you're still getting stuff all over the page, right?
Exactly.
Now, you're from Boston, correct? Were you born there?
Oh yeah. Actually, a small suburb outside of Boston called Medford, and now I live in Malden, which is next door. You know, it's a huge football game every Thanksgiving, and but we kind of identify as Boston because that's the big city here, and you know, I'm literally two exits from Boston. If I take the wrong turn getting on the highway, I end up right in center town. So
looking at the aquarium, trying to find your way out of all the big stores, blah blah blah.
Oh yeah, I once got lost on Sturrow Drive for about an hour and a half taking a left turn when I should have taken a right 5 minutes from my house. So that's kind of my claim to fame. I'm kind of like Ryoga from Ron. I just get lost easy.
Nice. Now, when you were coming up, were you always into comics? Was that something like, you know, diapers, crawling comics, or when did you discover comics?
Well, being the younger of the Hebert brothers, I tend to gravitate towards whatever my brother liked. So when we were younger, we'd watch the Lou Ferrigno, Bill Bixby, Hulk, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends were huge. We'd watch the Super Friends. I always wondered why Spider-Man didn't show up. Basically what happened is my brother came home one day, because he was always really into Hulk, with a stack of 12 comics shoved into one poly bag. And it was Secret Wars 1 through 12. So I recognized a lot of the characters on front, and several other were new to me. So I kind of, after he finished every issue, I would then follow and read it behind him. So I'd sometimes be sitting there waiting for him to finish so I could continue. And, you know, honestly, from then on, it just solidified. And it's kind of been a slow-moving train wreck ever since.
Of course, it's been. I was going to be with you when you said slow moving train, but then you added wreck at the end. So yeah. when you were starting to get into comics after you grabbed that big stack of Secret Wars and probably ran off with them to get away from your brother, did you start going to comic shops after that, or was it just find them anywhere you could?
Well, yeah, because there's a New England Comics branch is right in Malden Square. And we just start kind of showing up there. And, after Secret Wars, it was like, what did I find interesting? I tried to get into Fantastic Four, and X-Men I really gravitated towards. And, from then on, it was just, you know, which ones do we put on the weekly subscription? How often can I get down there and save up my pennies to pick up what's sitting in the file? And of course, I'd been drawing since I could hold a pencil anyway. So it really took no time for me to start drawing, you know, superheroes.
Now, what was it with the X-Men that you connected with? Can you tell, or it was just, hey, this is what I like?
Well, again, you know, Secret Wars kind of introduced me to everything. And I found X-Men to be a very interesting concept, not just because of the great idea of the persecuted mutants, but specifically because, you know, you have this group of heroes interacting with each other. You know, it's not Spider-Man talking to himself at a rooftop. And of course, Wolverine was awesome. There was a Secret Wars figure of Wolverine that I desperately wanted. After I finished Secret Wars, I'm like, okay, I'm going to branch out. I started looking for some kind of other event to get myself into it. And I stumbled on X-Men Inferno and X-Men versus X-Factor in one of the issues in Inferno. And I just picked up a bunch of them and I started reading those. My brother kind of branched off into Hulk. And
the rest is history.
Absolutely.
Now with the with Secret Wars going on, have you been right now again? Have you been checking out some of the mock toy packages that they've been doing?
Yeah, my problem is that every time I see one of those, I want to go out and buy the toy, and it doesn't exist. So it's literally like being a kid again, seeing those ads inside Secret Wars for the Secret Wars toys. But when we got into them, those toys had long come and passed and been out of stores. So you couldn't find them anywhere. So I'm right back to staring and drooling at figures I can't have.
You know, there's always eBay, if you want to spend like $5,000 on a figure.
Oh, I know. No, I ended up picking them up in my adult years, but now there's plenty of superhero toys out there now.
So as you came up, you were, collecting comics and you and your brother developed love affair of comics. Did you ever fall out of love with comics, like going to college or anything like that?
It's interesting, because I never fell out of love with the concept, but what would happen is I would fall out of touch with the current state of them, which has happened a lot. And, again, being a creative type, when me and my brother started, putting together our own stuff, I started caring less and less about what was going on in Marvel and DC. I was always what I call a secondary media fan. At that point where, I hadn't read X-Men in years, but there was an X-Men animated series on, and I was definitely seeing every episode that Saturday morning. I would, go nuts at the slightest news of, there's a Captain America movie? Oh, that's going to be awesome. You know, you get the cinema effects and that horrible 1996 or 1992 or whatever it was, Captain America movie. I was all over that the minute I could get my hands on it. So I was always into the concept of superheroes. Even if the execution was sometimes not what I was weaned on.
Now, is it all superheroes for you, or do you read like some of the fringe stuff that's coming out, like from Image and other creators like that are not superheroes? Or your real love affair is the Mask and Cape set?
I love comics as a medium. I think that comics are definitely. Underutilized as a medium, and it's great that there's all this other stuff. I've occasionally done. Did I lose you here? Or am I still on?
Nope, I'm still here.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, if I have my wife is a veterinary nurse, and as a result, anytime anything with fur has its feelings hurt, it ends up at my house. So rather than you see me diving for something to make something not crash,
Gotcha. I made the Kickstarter video with a kitten running on my lap, which is why I'm kind of making a weird face throughout it. And in fact, if you stay to the end of it, I actually hold him up at the end. It was while I was talking. At one point, I just got annoyed with him. I'm like, yeah, see. So basically. This is live, folks, in case you haven't noticed. So basically what happened was, I was following all these comics in the secondary media. And, the reason that I was into them was because I was into not the medium of comic books per se, although I like that too, but the genre of superheroes always appealed to me. So it didn't matter what medium superheroes were existing in, I was all over it. So if it was a cartoon, I'd watch the cartoon. If it was a movie, I'd watch the movie. You know, if it was a radio serial, I'd throw that on. You know, so it was really, I love comics as a medium for anything you want to, any kind of story you want to tell. But superheroes are the genre within that medium that has always held my attention.
And since when that love affair really came into play, is that when you decided that you were going to start making comics too, that this is something you needed to do?
Yeah, it was a fun little story because I was, again, I'm always drawing. I was that kid who, you know, while the kids were taking their bikes to the park and causing trouble, I was in the basement with a stack of typing paper, furiously drawing. So, you know, basically, they gave me something to draw that was compelling. You know, it wasn't just, you know, doodling whatever was around or myself standing on a sunny cliff with trees in the background. It was all of a sudden like started drawing like, you know, the Hulk and Wolverine. And of course that's like the gateway drug for an artist, right? Because then you start, okay, well, what if I made this character? What if I made a guy who looked like this? And within minutes of finishing the first Secret Wars, I had doodled, you know, a character named Surge, who I'd end up seeing a lot more of over a few years.
Is Surge still around today?
Surge is the leader of Vindication. I created the entire team out of, again, you know, my love for X-Men and team books at the time. There was something about the idea of a team dynamic with a bunch of superheroes interacting like an ensemble cast rather than, you know, Spider-Man sitting on a rooftop kind of thinking out loud to himself. That always really appealed to me. So I kind of created the typical five-man band, you know, as a, you know, like I had the big guy, I had the girl, I had the, you know, this is at the time, you know, you're not thinking of, well, you know, is this diverse enough or you know, are these archetypes that you haven't seen before? To me, the archetypes were everything. So I was like, okay, I need a guy who can, you know, I need a guy who's good at hand to hand. Now I need a guy who can shoot. Now I need this and that. And I found over the years that, you know, that kind of creative naivety, we'll call it, when you're that young, actually gives you a really solid foundation to build something. And I was always a fan of taking something that's simple and built and rooted in something classic and simple, and then building layers of complexity on that so that it becomes something more, but yet something instantly recognizable and, you know, solid.
And being from Boston, or the Boston area, you know, you probably no stranger to diversity because, you know, Boston has a huge ethnic mix and always has. And when you look at the initial image for Vindication, mm-hmm. You do have a mix of genders and races and stuff like that. So
I do. I don't want to really give too much about what happens in the story, but I'll say that there's actually a section about Pitch Shift's creation that's in the trade paperback. But I actually created that character with a very specific role in that story. And he was the one that I actually created years later. You know, I'm the kind of person, I never sat down and said, okay, how can I add to the diversity of this? I'm always under the impression that diversity is something that comes natural through maturity of writing, where you get to a point where it's like, well, I don't have a character that looks like this, or even I just create a character and this is a fit for him the same way that I might design a character who maybe grew up in the Bronx or who has blue eyes. And I decide that, you know, maybe he's always going to wear a leather jacket the same way. Well, I created this character. Maybe he's going to be from Boston and he's going to look like this. I actually based that character. I needed someone who was instantly likable and affable, somebody who, you know, the readers would like look at and say, wow, this guy really holds the team together. He's the one guy in the team that has kind of common ground with everybody else there. And I needed him to be instantly likable. And at the time, the New England Patriots had just started their winning Super Bowl season. And my favorite player was Troy Brown. And Troy Brown, you know, he had these dreadlocks, this kind of little scruffy beard. And I saw him in an interview and they were like, you know, can you talk about your contribution? Because you made this catch and it was great. And he was like, oh, man, you know, I'm just doing what I'm doing. These guys are all great. I look up to them. And I'm like, This is this lovable, likable guy. So modest, so sincere. And I was like, I want that. And I made him look like that. And his name, the Pitchett's real name, is Glenn Troy, which is an amalgamation of Terry Glenn from the New England Patriots at that time period and Troy Brown.
So when these guys, you know, if we tag these guys on Twitter and they see this video, you know, you want to give a shout out? Anything you want to say?
Absolutely. Troy, thank you for everything you did. I kind of, every receiver who comes into the Patriots, when Welker showed up and when Edelman showed up and started weaving around, I was like, I like this guy. He's a Troy Brown.
So we have a benchmark.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of marks and, you know, all artists make them. You're pretty much an artist as well as a writer. When did you really start getting into, you know, scribbling lead all over the place?
So basically, I always wonder kind of if I would have continued on that path if Alan had not introduced me to Secret Wars back then, because I suppose, you know, I love drawing. I love the mechanical of it. You know, I'm the kind of person I could have fun drawing a fruit basket because I'm trying to figure out how to make an orange that's more like an orange. But, you know, it gave me something dynamic to draw. And what actually happened is my brother came to me one day and he was just kind of like looking at over my shoulder. I'm sitting there doodling. I think it was, in fact, actually, I know which drawing it was. It's a drawing I'm going to have in the trade paperback. It's a drawing of Serge showing off his powers. And my brother was looking at it and he was like, And he said, hey, those are beginning to look really good. I was like, oh, thanks. And he says, you know, I'm a writer. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And I had no idea. No one, he'd never lied to me before. So I figured, okay, you're a writer. Great. Okay, sure. And he's like, and you like to draw? I'm like, yeah. And he says, so why don't I just write the comics and then you can draw them? And I was like, whew, like, oh my God, that's wonderful. All of a sudden it was like, it was like a legitimacy I never had before. So I guess you can say what happened is he gave me this purpose. Suddenly, instead of just, I'm bored, let me draw. Now it's like, okay, I have something that I'm trying to complete and move towards. So, you know, at that point, and this was, oh God, this was 92. This was a long time ago. So, I mean, I was just like, from then on, this whole little venture has been taking up every free moment I've had.
The now with you now having that writer to pair with your art style, was that what you needed to get going, or did you realize, hey, I need an inker, I need a colorist, I need a an editor, I need this, or did you guys strike out on your own as just you two?
Initially, I was going to do it all. I was gonna be producing four monthly titles, because we had a friend Kenny who was also a writer, and you know he had superheroes that you know he had worked on himself, and we'd actually started to play. It was mostly the DC role playing game, the old DC role playing game, and we made these characters that you know we were talking about. And Kenny kind of joined up with us, and you know he had Mystery Man and Captain Justice, and you know Alan was playing Laser Man, and I was playing Surge, and you know we all started talking about how you know well this character could be related to this one in this way, this guy could go to the same school, and I was going to draw four titles every month, pencils, inks, colors, letters, the whole nine yards, and it didn't take all that long to figure out that that was not going to work. I forced myself to learn how to ink out of necessity because we'd had some hits and misses getting people to ink with us. And not all of them were for bad reasons either. I actually worked with an inker named Brian Boland, no relation to the Batman, Killing Joke artist, but, you know, he was an inker on, Laser Man number one. He was graciously doing it, just to be part of the project because we didn't have money at the time to give people. And, you know, one day I got, he was about three quarters of the way through an issue, and issue one, in fact, and he sent me a message saying, hey, I'm sorry, look, I got a paying gig. I can't do it. Best of luck to you. And that was it. And rather than, you know, put the whole project on hold, I was like, well, I can finish the last five pages. I'll teach myself how to do it. And I've been doing it since. And it just became obvious really quick that we needed other people to draw the other titles. I was gonna do Laser Man because that's my style is cartoony and stylistically fits the lighthearted nature of that book. And we needed someone to draw the other titles, so we started to make connections within the comic industry and social media, and we started reaching out to people, you know, just to get them to do pinups. And you know, we ended up running across Rodney, who did the first issue of Vindication for us, because he'd been tied up with a comic that they're now at a business at a place called Ultimate Comics Group, and he was doing Stormblazer for them occasionally. And I assumed that he was busy. I was like, look, you know, I know you got all these other projects going on. I just need someone to get me started because I need to find a permanent artist. And Rodney, being an awesome guy, was like, yeah, you know what, I'll work it in between the other pages I'm doing. I'll get you through the first issue, maybe the second one if you need me to. And about a week or so after Rodney started that, I ran into DC White, who also did some work for this other company. And I had asked him for a pinup just because I wanted a pinup from him of the characters. And when I got it back, I was like, oh my God, this is perfect. Like, this is how I try to draw Surge when I try to draw him. And I reached out to him. I said, look, I know you're probably involved in some other projects. And he was like, no, actually, I just finished up. I was like, oh, well then. Yeah. I'm wondering, and you know, obviously, you know where it's going from there. And DC actually jumped in. I call him DC because he goes by DC White, but his name's Danny. So sometimes I if you hear me say Danny or DC, I'm talking about the same guy.
Right on.
He jumped in on issue two. And I actually had pages from issue one coming back at the same time as issue two, because we had these two artists working on it. And I called Rodney. I said, hey, look, I got someone. He's going to jump right in on issue two. Just finish up issue one and we're done. And you can go back to what you're doing. Ironically, years later, and literally just within the last 6 months to a year, I kind of reconnected with Rodney, and he's working digitally, so he works a bit faster than he used to. And we got into a conversation about how he's able to produce and the rate that he's able to go, and he's going to be doing another title for us now. So now the original Vindication number one artist is actually going to be joining us for a title that we just announced called Legion of Justice. So that's like we're working with both of the Vindication artists who worked in this trade paperback are both doing full titles for us. DC is on Vindication, and now Rodney's going to be starting Legion.
That's fantastic. Oh, yeah. The it sounds like you're starting to build up a pretty good stable.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm very, very happy with all the people we work with. It's quite amazing.
Now, you know, you were talking, DC is now doing digital. And before we got going, we were talking about how you produce art. You were saying that now you go digital. Yeah. I assume you started working with pencil originally?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I tried like the art school pencils, the ones that, you know, the HB Leads and all those other things. And I just kind of, I can't describe how I actually work other than to say that, like, I always need the lead to be, you know, micro sharp at all times. So I just started using like like 0.5 mechanical pencils. And, you know, I was the kind of person before Photoshop was really I'm showing my age a bit, before Photoshop was really a thing that was used a lot, I always said, you know, there's got to be a way we can use the computer to color these things, because these Dr. Martin watercolor dyes are really hard to work with. So, you know, as soon as Photoshop and all these things became available, I was like first in the bandwagon to be like scanning my artwork in. And I'd be looking at it and be like, all right, that head is just way too big. I can just shrink it and match up the lines again. And, you know, as soon as I became aware that tablets had progressed to where they did, it wasn't too long before I had a Cintiq. And I actually, in the middle of Laser Man number 7, I actually stopped dead with the pencil pages. I actually own the last page ever produced in traditional medium. And then everything from the middle of Laser Man 7 on that I've done has been 100% on the computer.
That's pretty wild. How long did the process take you? Like, what was the learning curve between going from pencil to doing something like Cintiq?
Some people, you know, were telling me, yeah, you know, it's a good investment, and don't be discouraged if it takes you a long time to get used to the transition. But just something about the way that I operate when I draw, The minute I hooked up the Cintiq and said, okay, let me try to draw Alex, the main character from Laser Man, I was just like, all right, I'm prepared for this to be awkward. And then it was just like, boom, 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 boom. Perfect. Do this. And it was like, oh my God, it felt like the most natural thing in the world. It's more natural to me than working on paper.
And you would also mention that you're a lefty, so there wasn't any of that awkward smudging across the...
Exactly. I didn't have the graphite palm.
You ever work so late you fall asleep and at your drafting board and you wake up and you got a face full of lead?
Actually, ironically, I probably shouldn't say this because it makes me sound really weird, but I tend to draw like on the corner of my bed, usually while my wife and or my daughter are sleeping in the bed and I'm up late and I have like a table tray with my set. I got two table trays. One of them has my laptop. One of them has the Cintiq, and I'm literally like turn in bed and like I get too tired and I'm just like turn out, you know?
So that's the price of comics while being a husband and a dad.
Exactly. Husband and a dad and an airport employee, by the way. I work for British Airways when I'm not making comics. So everything is, you know, between shifts and get home late. I'll get home at 11 o'clock. I'll draw till 3 sometimes. It's just.
And that's one of the interesting things that I've found while doing this. There's a lot of guys out there that are doing this, you know, in between the ticks of a clock. Oh, yeah. And it's really interesting to see to actually find out what people do in between those comic pages. We've talked to one guy who's border patrol agent. We have another guy who works at an auto repair shop. A guy who does my business partner Andrew. He used to be an actor, you know. Okay. So I mean, you know, he's worked in stuff like movies, TV shows like Eureka. So it's really interesting to see like where people come from and come into comics. So that's pretty wild.
Oh, yeah.
You'd mentioned Laser Man. Mm-hmm. So where was Laser Man born? How did Laser Man come about?
Okay, so going back a little bit, that conversation where, you know, Alan says, so you like to draw, yeah, and I like to write, okay, you know, let's do comics. Literally, that conversation continued. The very next words spoken were, and I already have a character that, you know, is ready to go. I'm like, great, we'll add him to the pile. And he's like, he's called Laser Man. I was like, oh, God. Okay.
Crickets.
I was like, oh, my God. I literally, he walked away. He just said it and then walked away, and I was like, oh God, no wonder I didn't know that he was a writer. It's like, I made the assumption that unfortunately, you know, sometimes people make when they hear it. I was like, that like seems so devoid of creativity. It's the most generic name you can imagine. It sounds lame. It would take me a little while and, you know, until he handed me a script to begin to realize what Laser Man was. And the entire concept of Laser Man is that he is a comic book geek. And in this bizarre twist of fate, he actually ends up getting real superpowers. So you're supposed to be seeing the escapades of a superhero who is a geek himself. And he's like, oh, great. I know exactly what to do now because I've been reading comics my whole life. And the world doesn't work like that at all. And, you know, it's kind of about him learning that, yeah, you know, the world, this isn't a comic book world. And, that way we can kind of work satire into the book without it being, you know, like a tick level farce, you know, which I love the tick, but I mean, that's not what we're doing here. It's an homage. It's a classic. It's a throwback to classic superhero stuff, and making him a comic book geek allows us, it kind of gives us a free pass to do the most blatant comic book tropes. Without having to like, we need to find a way to explain how he comes up with the name Laser Man. No, it's easy. He's a comic book geek. I have laser powers. Perfect. I'm Laser Man. Done.
And you know something, you can picture those guys that you were talking comics with when you were 15, 16, grabbing a comic and being like, this is an instruction manual. I know what to do.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
The now, judging by what you have in the background, right along your either left shoulder, the other side.
The mattress?
No. You have a stack of Laserman comics above that.
Oh yeah. The wall of here. Actually, let me. This is a rare peek inside the HB Comics studio. By the way, this is my brother's house. I'm here because my mom is babysitting my kids upstairs. I was telling you before we started here, I literally, before I came in and signed on, I went upstairs, opened the door, I said, okay, now, no one come visit Daddy right now. Daddy's going to be busy for an hour. He's going to be on the radio. So please don't, you know, but I'll give you a little peek here. Up top, we have, you know, every release that we've come out with so far. There's actually a couple missing there just because we haven't gotten the Mylar bags for them. But every time we put out a new book, we throw it up there on the wall. And the idea is eventually to be wrapping around this place.
That's fantastic. So Laserman gets into trouble, gets himself out of trouble, gets himself into trouble. At what point does Laserman realize, I can't keep doing this like I'm doing it?
Well, that's largely what the series is about. I've always been under the impression that if you are, of course, I say this like I do, my brother's the writer, but you know, we talk a lot about this stuff. And the way that we approach this is every story, every series kind of asks a question, has something to say, something that drives it. The thing that drives Laserman is, what is a hero really? What does it take to be a hero? And every arc that we're introducing kind of takes you a little bit further along that concept. And you know, most of the villains that he encounters kind of, you know, represent something that you would, you know, go up against. You know, the first arc was called This Man, This Laser, which is a not so subtle wink to Stan Lee and This Man, This Monster. And that was very largely about, you know, he gets the superpowers, he runs around trying to play hero, and he doesn't really get it right until he a moment where he completely forgets that, you know, he's pretending to be a hero and holy crap, someone's in trouble. I got to do something real quick. And then he just does it right. And, you know, he's kind of made a step towards on that hero path. You know, the next arc is called Night of the Necrolord, and he goes up against zombies. And, you know, there's a lot of little, you know, things about change and, you know, the things that he's kind of letting go of some of the things that you're used to. The next arc that we're going to be getting into, which is going to be called Big Time, without getting too much into it, because that's actually where we're going to finally meet the guy who we would probably consider to be Laserman's actual arch nemesis, is really the first actual challenge that he's had. In the first story arc, he fights a thug named Razorman who he basically can mop the floor with because he's so powerful. The second arc, he goes up against Necrolord and he's fighting a bunch of zombies, and it's really about figuring out what the plan is. And once he does, he pretty easily mops up. In the next arc, Big Time works as a title for a few reasons. The main, or at least one of the main ones being, he's going to go up against something that for the first time, it's like, he can't just throw all of his might at this and call it done. And that's another step on his evolution to becoming a hero. So he's slowly getting away from being the satirical element and slowly getting towards being the torchbearer of the classic superhero archetype.
So when does Big Time start releasing? When should we start seeing that story?
I'm aiming for July of next year. We got to take a little bit of a break. I mean, we are doing this, you know, obviously as independents. So I'd love to tell you, oh, next month on the newsstands. But, you know, the idea is that we have something new every time we hit the convention circuit. So we just came back from Philadelphia last at the beginning of June. So, like, we had Laserman number 9. And then, you know, next time we go back, oh, here's a new one that you didn't have last time. And having 4 titles that we're going to be rotating, it means every few months we have something coming out somewhere.
That seems to be the plan that a lot of the indie guys do. You know, they try and get something out on a regular basis, and it might not be the same title every time. So that's definitely a smart way to do it. Yeah. So we got Laser Man down. Mm-hmm. And but right now we have this Kickstarter running.
Yeah.
And like we were saying a little bit ago, we had we're about halfway there and you got 20 days to go. Mm-hmm. You're trapped in an elevator and you know you got 17 floors to go and somebody sees you know you working on a tablet. You got Vindication right there. They ask you what's that about. What do you tell them?
Okay, well, I'll tell you, I'll give you what I call the convention pitch. I've always been under the impression that every you know, title that you're producing should probably have something that you can just kind of say in a sentence. And to sum up Vindication as quickly as possible, is to say it's a character-driven teen book that is set in a world that has just learned that superheroes are in fact real and everything that goes along with that. So to expand on that, what does that really mean? Our world, we're trying to build a superhero world like a Marvel or a DC, but instead of coming out and being like a lot of indie to them, I've actually read some really good books that start out this way. I'm just talking about the way we're doing it now. You know, no disrespect to any of the established universes that start out the indies. There's a lot of real great stuff out there. Stray being one of them, which I see right over there. Love me some Stray. But Vito, you owe me.
we'll see that the check's in the mail.
So basically, in our world, the way that we're building it is there are no superheroes to start out. It starts out at square one, just a regular world like the one that we live in now. Suddenly, in our timeline, Laser Man literally shows up out of nowhere. He's an accident. You see that in the events of the first trade paperback. And the aftermath of that is, well, wait a minute. This kid just showed up flying. What on earth is going on? And through Vindication, you start to see the more serious side. Laser Man's very playful and fun. Vindication gives you a much more serious look at what's going on. And what we're seeing in Vindication is the world has suddenly realized, oh, holy crap, this is real stuff. What is going on? And Vindication, we're dealing with how the world is reacting to this monumental discovery that superpowered people are real. There are actually people. You know, I could be going to the store to buy bread and there could be a monster destroying half of downtown. It's a real problem. Uh-huh. And how is society dealing with that? How are the government going to say, all right, how are we going to deal with superpowered threats? How are we going to deal with the public's reaction now? The public is kind of literally on the verge of panic at this point. And it's through this, through the prism of these heroes who come together in Vindication, that we're seeing what that world looks like as it descends from a world that we know into a world like a Marvel or DC where superheroes are a fact of life. We're telling the story of how one becomes the other.
And when we start seeing these characters show up and interact with each other, do you get a lot of, oh my God, I thought I was the only one?
Well, there's this kind of thought that Pitt Shift actually didn't know that there was anyone else. Well, actually, that's not 100% true. I don't want to get too much into what Pitt Shift. But you'll just read it, folks. For the most part, a lot of the supers, as we call them, are aware that there are others like them because most of them stem from kind of the same origin point. And you actually learn in, you know, Vindication number four, you know, kind of that the government has known about this and that they're largely responsible for what's going on. So there's kind of this small community of superpowered individuals who are hiding, and they're kind of just trying to keep it to themselves because they're kind of worried about what's going to happen when the other shoe drops. Laser Man is not part of that community. Laser Man was a one-off accident. So he throws on this suit and is like, okay, I'm going to run around and I'm going to be a superhero. And all of the other supers are like, oh my God, what's he doing? Why? Oh God. And again, one is affecting the other. The events of Laser Man, as silly as they are and as fun as they are, have real repercussions in the pages of Vindication, and vice versa. And even though the books don't cross over as of yet, there are characters who exist in both. There are major figures in the universe who you see in both. And you're definitely feeling the presence of the other. And we're kind of, you know, Laserman sets off this chain of events, and Vindication, we're starting to deal with what happens and how the world is beginning to change now that, you know, the inevitability of one of them deciding to just go public in a spectacular way is now becoming a reality.
And you have some pretty interesting tiers set up. You know, you have everything from, you know, get the standard book with the standard cover to variant covers. You got sketches. I mean, you got a lot to offer as far as a lot of this stuff goes. Now, I also see that you have an action figure available.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about getting into that process and how design like that works?
Certainly. What actually started was the last campaign we did, Night of the Necrolord, which was Volume 2. Actually, Night of the Necrolord. It's the finished. We had to come up with a stretch goal. And I came up with the brilliant idea once we hit our thing that, you know what, there's 3D printing is pretty accessible. You can go to Shapeways, you can go to a number of different online places, send them a 3D model, and they could print out something. So I was like, why don't we'll get someone to put together a 3D model of Laserman, and we'll offer that up as a reward. Now, unfortunately, I think I overshot a bit, and I made the stretch goal on Night of the Necro a little bit too high, so we never hit it. So that figure just kind of, okay, you know, I have a half-finished model somewhere. So when we launched the May You Live in Interesting Times, the one of the first things that I said is, okay, you know, let's revisit that. And I actually have a friend, a really good kid named Cody Bueller, who works with me at British Airways, who's going to school for video game design. So I kind of, you know, went to him and I said, hey, you know, would you be willing to make a 3D model for me that I can use for this purpose? And he was like, yeah, sure, no problem. So, you know, he did that. And I just posted yesterday, actually, some first test shots, which I only myself saw yesterday. And, you know, we already have a couple people who have gotten the tiers that involve the action figures. So we know what's coming. So basically, he's going to finish this. We're going to pose it dynamically, but you know, somewhere between, you know, a station, you know, a generic superhero pose and something that's still dynamic. And we're going to print out at the same size of like, you know, the 3¾-inch, like the Star Wars figures, the Marvel figures, so that you can put it on your shelf next to your Marvel figures. And, you know, that's just 3D printing. It's the technology.
Do you have any of those figures already printed out? Like, did you print a test?
No, the model's not even done yet. So we're also waiting to see what happens, because without getting into detail, if we were to make our goal within the next maybe week or so, we might be announcing different things we're doing with the action figure. I'm not gonna answer it.
So that's a hint, folks. Go out and become a backer. Yeah. You have all sorts of stuff as far as background and whatnot on the page. You also have pictures of everybody involved, so that's
oh yeah,
that's pretty groovy. So you can kind of get to know the team. You had talked about conventions and going to conventions, and you guys just got back. Mm-hmm. How much pimping of this did you do at conventions?
Actually, very little, and I kind of regret that because when we did. Philadelphia Comic Con, Wizard World Philadelphia, which is our favorite convention. It had been so long since we had been there. We were just kind of trying to reestablish connection with our fan base. We missed a year, which in, you know, convention terms means that we weren't there for 2 years. And that was like our main city that we did. We had to skip that for personal reasons. And, you know, we weren't really thinking in terms of we have this Kickstarter coming up. We're figuring in terms of, you know, let's make sure that, you know, we get the word out on our stuff again so that when we launch it, people will be like, oh, HB Comics, we saw them at the convention. Last thing you want to do is be like, yeah, there's this Kickstarter coming up, and then people forget about it. So I probably, in retrospect, I probably should have started promoting it then. But we're going to be at Northeast Comic Con next week, actually a week from yesterday. Northeast Comic Con here in Massachusetts at the Shriners Auditorium, which is probably one of the most fun conventions we've ever been to. We went last year, and the main theme of that convention for us is going to be getting the word out on the Kickstarter, and we're going to do things like we're going to offer actually instant rewards. So like if you, we'll have our computer and your smartphone there, and we'll be like, you know what, if right now, if you back Vindication at the $25 trade paperback level, you're walking out with this comic. You don't gotta spend your money on something else at this convention. Back the product, honor system that you're not going to cancel it afterwards to get free stuff. Take it with our blessing, enjoy it, and that's kind of one of the things that we're going to do.
Nice, that's pretty wild. Yeah, yeah. I haven't heard of somebody doing stuff like that. So that's definitely pretty groovy. And you guys going to be there? I assume the con is 3 days. You guys going to be there the whole time?
It's a 2-day convention, this one. And yeah, absolutely. You know, we have everything set up. We're just putting together some promotional materials for the show. And yeah, I mean, it's a fun time.
Excellent. Now, you know, moving away from Vindication a little bit, you had mentioned that you guys got some serious new stuff coming out.
Oh, yeah.
You have, you know, HB Comics Mystery Man. Now, you had said the website's a little out of date, but yeah. Number one's already released. Can you give us a little bit? Because Mystery Man actually looks kind of cool. I mean, he's a lot of black and gray, but he's just got this very intense vibe to him.
Oh yeah, that's largely due to the art from Fernando Martin, also known as the Fern. Look him up on Facebook. He's an awesome guy, and his stuff is so dynamic. It's so detailed. It's just an amazing guy. And Mystery Man is it's actually kind of a spinoff of Laser Man. Laser Man 7 and 8 introduce this character of Mystery Man, who you know, is actually somebody from Alex's Laser Man's life, who ends up becoming a superhero too. And, you know, we had this whole campaign, you know, who is Mystery Man, you know, find out finally. And we set that up for a while. And then on the first page, it's like the guy sitting there, hi, I'm Mystery Man. Okay. All right. Forget about the mystery. Let's just talk about how I got here. And, you know, we introduce him in that 2-issue arc in Laser Man. And then he kind of spins off into his own series. He was one of those things that, you know, we'd have the conversations when we were role-playing. I know you're involved with Banff. You guys do a lot of tabletop stuff. So a lot of these initial storylines were actually adventures we did for each other that we then adapted, which was kind of neat. And, you know, Mystery Man is something that came out of, I have this character who's kind of similar in a lot of ways to Laser Man. What if they went to school together? What if they know each other? What if he becomes Mystery Man and reaches out to Laser Man because he knows Alex? He knows that this, you know, superhero is here already. And it's like, holy crap, it's Alex, because Laser Man has the worst secret identity ever. He has goggles, and a little shot at Superman, even though I love Superman. He's got the goggles and expects nobody will recognize him. Mystery Man is fun because it has definitely a different vibe from Laser Man. It still has some humor in it. It has a lot of humor, but that humor can tend to be a little bit more dark. And we deal with things in Laser Man in Mystery Man that we never deal with in Laser Man. A lot of mob stuff. It can be a little bit more violent. It's not over the top violent. None of our stuff is really over the top violent, but Mystery Man certainly gets a bit edgier, because the point of Mystery Man is that he's actually, I mean, in a way, he's the polar opposite of Laser Man. Laser Man is the comic book geek who is kind of not getting the superhero thing right, because he understands superheroes way too much. And Mystery Man is the complete opposite. He's kind of the regular guy who's like, oh, I saw Avengers. I know what superheroes are. And he doesn't get what it is to be a superhero enough. You know, that they see someone, you know, pushing what looks like a crime scene, you know, a wrecked Hummer with blood everywhere off of a dock. And Laser Man's like, oh, let's go stop this. And Mystery Man's like, can we call the police? Because there's blood down there. Like, you know, he just, without getting into it, again, pick it up and read it. 1 minute, Mystery Man seems to be really into being Mystery Man. He's like devoted, and the next minute he doesn't seem to care at all. And there's something up with him. Everyone knows that we don't know what it is. It's called Mystery Man for a reason. We don't know what it is that is, but something is driving him to do this, and we don't, he's not consistent with it. Like in the first issue of Mystery Man, he's throwing a party and Laser Man shows up and he's like, whoa, wait a minute, aren't we supposed to go patrolling? And he's like, but I have a party going on. Like, he just, one minute he doesn't seem to care, and the next minute he's driven beyond measure. So, you know, some psychological stuff that we wouldn't really get into in Laser Man.
So pick it up and read it, folks. You know you want to.
Exactly.
Now we have, the darkness of Mystery Man offsetting the lightness of Laser Man. And then you have Vindication, which is, you know, the consequences of all this running around wearing masks and capes. But you actually have a plan to bring in new readers with to show them these universes by reaching an underserved audience.
Oh, yes.
Can you talk a bit about Team Synergy?
Oh, absolutely. Out of all our projects, and I love them all, Team Synergy is ironically one of the newer ones, and one that I'm kind of more excited about almost than anything else. I probably shouldn't say that while we're running a Kickstarter for one of them, but I'm just, there's been a lot of talk about this lately, and ironically, we've been planning it before most of this talk kicked up. Team Synergy is, I mean, I describe it as kind of a cross between Teen Titans and My Little Pony. There's been a lot of talk lately, and again, this came before the talk. I want to say that because I have two daughters. I have my Lorelai and Ashlyn. And Lorelai, who's, you know, 9 years old, I always see her fighting with her cousin over, you know, who's going to play Starfire. Like, they don't care about Robin or Beast Boy or Cyborg. They want to play Starfire, you know, and usually one of them will settle on playing Raven. And, you know, we'd watch them play and we'd be like, this is what they want. They want a superhero like them. So my brother, again, he's the writer of Laser Man. He's also the writer of Team Synergy. Kind of took several characters that we've been working on for other things. I created the character Glitterbug for a project that we ended up scrapping, and Scatterbrain as well. My brother, kind of had this character Hot Pink, and a couple others. And my friend Kenny had created Awesome Girl. And Alan decided to pull them all together and be like, all right, this is going to be Teen Titans, but they're all young girls. And the concept behind that is that their grandmother, their great-grandmother, actually, they just call her Granny, is one of the original superheroes, one of the first test subjects in an ongoing thing in our universe called Project Tomorrow Man, where they're trying to create a superhero. She was one of the first. And now she's too old to be running around doing anything. But all of her nieces and nephews through genetics, through, you know, being passed down, have powers. So she kind of fills the Professor X role, I guess you could say. And she's like, all right, I'm going to train you guys, and you guys are going to be a super team. And we're going to, now that superheroes are out in the world, I'm going to teach you girls what you need to. And we're going to send you out, and you're going to go fight crime. And, you know, these girls are all kind of, all from different walks of life, all from different, it's a very diverse team. It's a very socially diverse team as well. I mean, you know, Hot Pink is from the cool kids. Awesome Girl is kind of the sporty tomboy type. And, all different social groupings, but they're all family, so they all have that in common. And one of the characters, Glitterbug, who I mentioned, she's a bit overweight for a girl her age, and she deals with that, and that's something that girls deal with. That's something that I've seen firsthand. And we want the kind of thing that people are going to pick up and say, oh my god, this speaks to me. Like, oh my, I have a daughter, she needs to read this. And we're really excited about it.
Now, does Granny go all Yoda at some point and get to use her powers? Do we get to see Granny throw down a little bit?
You're going to have to ask Alan about that one. I have one script from him, which is currently being brought to life by the wonderful Scott Shriver. He's fantastic. He's done some stuff with Zenforce. And he's turning out some awesome pages. And, as far as, the production... For that, it's probably the title I'm least involved in, because I color it and I work as a liaison for all the artists. I'm like the artistic director, is the BS title I've given myself. So I work between Alan and Scott and kind of trying to offer my, well, why don't we go this direction artistically? And Alan's really the one who knows what's going to go on with Granny and what he's planning. What I can tell you is that the first issue is probably one of the most fun things I've read. And I can't wait to get this into people's hands.
Nice. Speaking of getting things into people's hands, where can people find your comics? Can we go digitally? Can we get hard copies?
So I'm always under the impression that, you know, tactile is the best. We are on Comixology. At least the first two volumes of Laser Man are available on Comixology. Vindication, May You Live in Interesting Times, will be on Comixology as soon as this Kickstarter is over. I'm going to be submitting that. You know, what we tend to do is release the single issues as kind of a convention thing. And then when we get enough for a full story arc, we collect it. Usually do a Kickstarter to get that physically printed so that we can get them in bulk. And then we can actually go through retailers and stuff, the retailer, the appropriate retailer discounts. So the best way to get it is to go to our website and order it. To see us at a convention is always good. Or in this case, to go to the Kickstarter, because, you know, we got variant covers in the Kickstarters usually. And, you know, in this particular case, we have a variant cover by Rodney Jacobson, who's the issue one artist, as opposed to the standard cover, which is done by DC White. But I mean, in the past, we've had variant covers by Ethan Van Shiver. He did a variant cover for Laser Man Volume 2. Billy Tucci did a variant for issue one of Laser Man. If you go look on the Kickstarter for May You Live in Interesting Times, you'll see that there. We still actually have some of those. If you want one, I'll send it to you.
Oh my God, Billy Tucci!
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Mario Gully, who did Ant for Image Comics, did a variant for Volume 1 as well. So, you know, you never know, guys, if we hit our goal in Vindication, we might have a stretch goal that involves another cover, I'm not saying. But, you know, we won't know until we get there, will we? So,
well, we're just going to have to push.
So, yeah, and I got to say, too, I keep meaning to mention this and I keep talking too much. But, you know, we were talking about, you know, how we're seeing the world change. That's the reason that it's called May You Live in Interesting Times. It's an old, it's actually an incorrectly attributed old Chinese curse. The idea is that, you know, you say, may you live in interesting times, and it sounds like this really nice thing to say to somebody. But really, the worst times to live in human history are the ones that are the most interesting. It's always better to live in a boring time period where nothing bad is happening. This is very, in our universe, we're kind of making a statement that these are very interesting times.
Well, the opposite of that is if you don't live in interesting times, you can never aspire to anything great. So, you know, very aptly named to the Kickstarter.
Well said.
You had mentioned conventions, and you got the convention, the next convention this coming weekend?
This coming weekend, yeah.
What does your convention schedule look like for the rest of the year?
So we're going to be doing this convention, which is Northeast Comic Con. It's actually run by Gary Sumner, the guy who does Antique Roadshow. He puts on a really fun convention, actually. He does a lot of stuff that a lot of other conventions haven't really thought of or haven't tried. Really unique stuff he does in these. Then we're going to be hitting, I think the next one after that is Boston Comic Con. Right here in Boston at the end of July, going into the first few days of August. Then in the middle of August, we're going to be doing Comic Con in Connecticut, which is going to be the Mohegan Sun. So I'm looking forward to that for a multitude of reasons.
Adult Playground being one of them.
Exactly. And then after that, we haven't cemented it yet, but there's a good chance that we're looking at possibly Wizard World Austin, which is the nice thing, by the way, about working for an airline. I can actually I can get myself done in Austin fairly easily. So
excellent. Now, if people want to stalk you on the internet in a nice way, where can they find you?
So honestly, the most up to date is, because I'm really not as good with social media and tech as I should be, would be Facebook. www.facebook.com/HBComics. Like the page and do yourself a favor. If you want to see our stuff, because we're learning this the hard way, go into the settings and select that you follow us. That makes you more likely to see our stuff. If you just click like, then there's a random chance you'll see our posts or not. If you actually click that you want to follow, you'll get our updates, or at least so I'm being told. So follow us there. You can always go to hbcomics.com. Eventually, when we get that site up to date, we're going to have, another actually ongoing thing called Hardcore and Lethal, which is a web only comic that we put out, again, set in the same universe. So just in case you didn't think we had enough projects going on, Hardcore and Lethal as well. And that'll be on the website, so you're going to want to go there. And of course, you're going to want to see us at Kickstarter.com right now, because I really, really want to get some of these stretch goals going, because they're going to be really cool.
Well, we're going to post this up to the web, and that way people can have a small archive about not only what HB Comics is, but what you guys are doing. So hopefully that'll get the word out. And then you had also mentioned earlier, you got a Twitter handle?
Yeah, it's at HB Comics.
Nice and easy. And how often do you post? I mean, can people jump into your Twitter and kind of see inside baseball about what's going on with HB Comics?
That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get better at using Twitter. It's one of those things I had to force myself to learn a little bit more since doing the Kickstarter, because everyone's like, what do you mean you're not using Twitter more? Like, use Twitter. I'm like, all right. So I'm just kind of beginning to learn about that. So it's kind of quickly getting addicting. I'm finding myself jumping on my phone when I have a second and just throwing up nonsense sometimes. So we'll start to use that more.
Excellent. And any possibility we could see, because you do have a growing catalog, any possibility we could see a handbook of the HB universe?
Eventually. My goal has always been to not need a handbook. Eventually, if there's desire for that and people want like one little handy guide, that's great. But, when I said our approach to building a universe is different than a lot of other indies out there. I've seen indies that come out and they, have this whole built universe already. And, you almost have to have the handbook because, well, I don't know who these characters are. Who are they referencing here? The idea, the way that we're trying to release these is that we want to introduce them at such a slow pace that when you get to where you need to, you know the characters because you've been reading them. We're trying to create a sense of familiarity before we even get to the point where we need that. However, that said, if people want something like that, then I'm not against putting that together. I think it'd be interesting.
And if somebody wants to jump in and experience HB Comics for the first time, what would be that one issue that you'd hand them to say, give this a try, and if you like, come back for more?
That's actually a really difficult question, because I used to say Laser Man. However, the thing that I've learned is that our comics have such a unique flavor to each of them. I mean, they're all set in the same world, but Laser Man is kind of goofy and silly and appeals to the kind of people who love that classic stuff. Vindication literally appeals to the complete opposite audience. And then Mystery Man does something totally different from either of them. And Leader of Justice is going to have its own feel. And Team Synergy is once again, a completely different feel. So I think what I can say is that depends on which kind of comic book reader you are. If you were the kind of person who watched the first Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire and cheered when the Green Goblin went, "We'll meet again, Spider-Man," pick up Laser Man, because that's totally for you. If you were the kind of person who's like, "Well, that was kind of stupid," then you're probably going to dig Vindication because it's a bit more grounded. If you're the kind of person who plays Knights of the Old Republic who plays Fallout 3 and finds the nicest character you can and blows them up with a rocket launcher, You'll probably find Mystery Man a bit funnier. I mean, he's not, don't get me wrong, he's not like doing that stuff, but still, like, he that darker humor. So it really depends what you're up to. My goal isn't to have one book to put forward to say, this is HB Comics in a nutshell. My goal is to have something for you no matter what kind of comic you want to read.
That's excellent. That is absolutely excellent. Well, we've reached the pretty much the jumping back out point. So everybody should run out, check out Vindication, May You Live in Interesting Times on Kickstarter now. Okay, we have 17 days to go as of the time of this recording, and it looks like HB Comics is poised to do some really interesting stuff, so we should all go out and back that now.
And I'll tell you what, if you mention this podcast in the, if you go and you back it and you mention this podcast in the comments section, what I'm going to do is, May You Live in Interesting Times is the first story, because issues 1 through 3, issue 4 is out already. If you mention this podcast in the comments, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to throw in issue 4 if you get a shippable reward.
Right on. That's fantastic. Thank you very much for doing that. And we've been sitting here with Chris and from HB Comics. And my name is Walt, and I'm from Hazard Studio. And with that, we are out.